Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 24 of the Self-Help Podcast. Sean, did you know that last week we were number 38 in the self-help category for iTunes?
Well,
that's ridiculous.
It's amazing. We should be number one.
We should be number one. Surely we're top 10. We've got to be the best.
I got to agree with that. I think that is completely right. They must have got their sums wrong.
I think it's a disgrace. But I would. How are you doing? You okay?
I'm good. I'm experiencing a little bit of pain.
Yes.
I'm a foolish man.
Pesky ankle. Yeah, well, it's not your ankle, is it?
It's the Achilles. All that work with Conrad, running my 5K, really good. And then a week ago, doing my tendon, and then resting it for a week and thinking I'll be okay now, and then going to run again and doing it again.
So someone kind of diagnosed it for you and said something interesting, didn't they, about your relationship with pain?
Oh yeah, weird. I was speaking to a pain consultant, and he was asking me, the phrase is, what on a scale of 1 to 10 is the pain? And I'm thinking, I haven't got a clue what you're talking about, and I didn't really understand what he meant. And several people have asked me that. And then when he got into it, and he asked me to explain how I experienced pain. And then he said to me, were you abused as a child? And I said, yes. And he said, that explains it. And weird, never thought about issues of pain. But apparently people that have been abused, tortured, raped, that kind of stuff, very often their experience of pain is different.
Right.
And very often people that have been abused can't identify pain in the way that other people would. So he said someone with the same injury who'd had a normal childhood would be rolling around in pain screaming.
Yep.
And the person that was abused would just be thinking, well, yeah, it's just sensation. It's just what you get used to. Which was a bit scary when I said it.
That's interesting. I sense another episode coming on about people's relationship with pain.
Maybe
a couple of weeks. We'll do some experiments on the podcast. We'll subject you to all sorts of...
Just saw your leg off.
Yeah. Contraptions and...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Cool. For those that are new to the show, that was Sean Orford. I'm Edward Lamb. We're going to be talking today this week about sleep, aren't we? We do, what, maybe a third of our lives we spend asleep?
Yeah, it's 32%.
Okay.
Statistically,
that's close then.
Yeah, if you live to 90, you're going to spend over 30 years of your life asleep.
So you need to be doing it right, and you need to be getting enough of it, etc.
Yeah, we need to understand it more. Okay. It's the kind of thing that everybody does, but we don't really appreciate what it is.
Yeah.
But we know that when we have a good night's sleep, we feel good, and when we're sleep deprived, we feel lousy.
I know plenty about that. Okay, well, we'll dive into that. Just before we do, for those new to the show, you want to find out more about who we are, go to liveinthepresent.co.uk. You can get your mitts on all sorts of cool freebies, and there's loads of blogs, archives that hopefully will increase your understanding of the world around you and yourselves, of course. Before we dive into the topic, I want to mention some reviews. We're actually a bit behind on these because we've been that busy chatting about other things that we've neglected our wonderful reviews. We love them all, don't we, Sean?
We do. The best people in the world.
Yeah, okay, we've had a few five-star reviews. Thank you to Starlight number 5. Thank you to When I'm Old, I'll Wear Purple. Nice name. Stormin 70090. Again, another five-star one. Here we got Trisha and Benny have said it's a great resource, and they stumbled across this gem.
Was that an ice cream? Was that Ben and Jerry's?
Yeah, and then two more. One by Sir Roger of Rutherglen. Names just get better and better.
That sounds wonderful, doesn't it? Yes. And we're now going to aristocracy.
Another one by Chines. Both those last two went into quite a bit of detail, and indeed Trisha and Benny. I'll read out Chines here. I subscribed to the podcast 2 weeks ago in order to download them all to take on holiday to Tunisia in half term. Hope you had a nice holiday.
Yeah.
Nice part of the world.
But it's warm there.
One day lying on the beach listening to them one after the other. The next day I felt a little lost without the podcast to listen to. See, you should have rationed them a little bit more. See, I'm like that with podcasts. I listen to them all in a row, and then I wish a few days later I hadn't done. Last one I listened to requested us to tell you where when we listened. So Tunisia. See if anyone can top
on that. The beach.
On the beach in Tunisia.
Yeah, I'd like to be on a beach in Tunisia. That would be nice.
Thanks to all our reviews. Superb. We appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
Aside from your ankle injury, Sean. Have you been up to much this week?
Life's good. Had a log burner fitted in the house, so the house has been a bit kind of chaotic.
Yeah, we got on then.
Wonderful to sit in front of a real flame fire.
Yeah.
And you stare at the flames and lose yourself.
Something about fire, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very, very much about what we're talking about today, really. But it's takes you back to the roots of humanity.
Mm.
Yeah. Forget flicking the switch and turning the electric on. We've got real flames.
Yes. Brilliant. Yeah, I've had a good week too. I was racing on Sunday.
Wow. Did you win?
No. We came eighth in the final out of 12. So it was a tricky day, actually. Tricky conditions. It's getting a bit cold and slippery. And last night, actually, I want to mention, I went to see a movie called Gravity. It's got George Clooney, Sandra Bullock in it.
Right.
A couple of astronauts. Something goes wrong on a spacewalk. Amazing film. Incredible. If you can go see it, and you can see it in 3D.
I saw a trailer for that. Josh and I went to see Thor 3D.
Oh, yeah.
Which was quite extraordinary. I love 3D movies. I love it when you duck because something's coming out.
I know. I'm a bit sceptical of them. I've seen a couple, and I didn't see the value. This is the first 3D movie I've seen that was actually like, okay, that I can see with it's bringing value and it's adding an extra layer, rather than just being just for the sake of it. And like, I don't know. But Gravity, amazing yeah. movie.
Yeah.
Just the concept of it is incredible.
Does she survive, the woman that flies off? You're not telling me that.
I'm not telling you that.
I saw the trailer where she flew off.
Yeah, I'm not telling you. Right, that's enough of us. Should we move on to our topic of the week, Sean?
Yeah, sleep.
Why do we sleep?
You start off, when you look at the research with Nobody Knows, that's where it begins. If you then start to look at brain function and the neuropsychology bit, then you're starting to look at what's happening while you're asleep. Two parts of the sleep pattern. One is the non-rapid eye movement, or non-REM, which is when you go into deep sleep. And the assumption was always that was about body repair. And then you'd come up on the dream cycle, which was rapid eye movement, where your eyes would be moving, your body would be moving. And you'd come up to almost consciousness and then dip back down again.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've seen that. The different waves of sleep. Is it fair? I mean, I've heard sleep described as putting ourselves into self-induced coma every day.
Well, it's not true that. And for many people, the brain is more active when we're asleep than when we're awake. There are parts of the brain that switch on, genes that switch on when we're asleep, that have fundamental effects on how we think, feel, and act, that aren't activated when we're awake. So for many people, their brain will be more active in sleep than it is when they're up and running about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you start to look at what's happening in sleep, the different things that we would identify is that there's the restoration function, which is about restoring the tissues of the body all over, where you're damaged and stuff, and healing in the body tends to go on at night much more.
Yep.
Certainly when kids are growing up, it's like the bone growth and stuff like that happens during sleep, rather than being awake.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of that cycle is the dream cycle. And we need to get into dreams in another episode we're talking about. But essentially, from our point of view, when you're in the dream cycle, what you're doing is you're actually encoding the information that you've learned during the day. We were talking a few episodes ago about how we develop that in the hippocampus. We start to develop new neurons for new learning, and those new circuits become embedded and will end up in long-term memory, but it's in the sleep process. And one of the things that we know is that people that become sleep deprived don't learn as well, because that part of the function is gone. People aren't actually embedding the new circuits in their system. And there's a whole load of things that go with that when you sleep deprived. So people will lose memory. They will become forgetful generally, but they will become inefficient. You know, people that drop things when they become dyspraxic, it's like they're lacking sleep.
What's your relationship with sleep like, Sean? Did you get a good night's
We were talking about this earlier on, and it's like I probably most nights will only actually be asleep for maximum 6 hours, which we'll come on to in a moment, which is seen as being wrong and not good and quite common, in fact. But the thing that I would say is, because I do meditations, either I do short ones during the day, might do a long one in the morning, that kind of thing, is that because of the ratio of 5 to 1, 10 minutes of good relaxation meditation is like 50 minutes of sleep. So someone may actually only be asleep for 5 or 6 hours, but they may be doing other things that are the sleep replacement.
Mm-hmm.
They are the equivalent of sleep.
Right.
Yeah, in other forms. Yeah. So I suppose that the next thing I'd like to consider is that men live longer than women. No, they don't.
No.
Women live longer than men.
Scratch that. Reverse
Scratch
it.
That. Yeah, reverse that around. but one of the things that becomes apparent is that women sleep longer than men.
Mm-hmm.
Women are more likely to doze off and get up later than the man.
Is that? I don't want to dive too deep. Is that true in your your house?
Yeah.
It is in ours. It is in ours.
Yeah.
We get up at the same time, but sort of. But I'll stay up later reading.
Yeah, I mean, that would be true also for me.
So I'm going to pay the price by living a shorter life.
Yeah. But the thing is that when you add it up, that men and women are awake for about the same amount of hours.
Okay.
Yeah, but because women sleep longer, they live longer. And that comes back to all kinds of things that we're beginning to understand about how the mind and the brain and the body work together. But part of it, we were looking a couple of episodes ago again about heart rate
and
death rate. Yeah, we have the same amount of heartbeats in a lifetime. Well, when you're asleep, your heart's beating slower.
Mm.
So the women, if they're sleeping longer, have a greater potential for more years.
Do you know how much your heart slows down by when you're asleep?
No, I would check that out. But it does. I mean, all kinds of things come down, like blood pressure,
yeah.
You know, heart rate, respiration, all that kind of stuff drops in. Unless you're having scary dreams, and then it goes right up again. Yeah. So men and women different. You know, longevity.
What about in terms of how our relationship has changed, as a species over the last 300-400 years then, or even...
Further back than that, really. The thing that we know about how light affects the way that the brain works is that in the circadian rhythms, the natural biorhythms of the body, that the natural state would be to go to sleep or to go in sort of a hibernated state when it got dark and to get up when it got light. As soon as man invented fire, we now have this issue about we can have light for longer.
Mm.
And what happens then is that human beings start to sleep less. So we go from fires to candles or lanterns. Then we get to the electric light bulb. And the point then is that we have daylight maybe 24 hours a day.
Yep.
So that the brain never actually goes to sleep because it's the light that makes the brain go to sleep.
Okay.
So the classic would be, before you go to sleep, to get a good night's sleep, your brain should experience a dulling of light, so you should be turning the lights down, and a period of darkness to prepare itself to go into sleep, which might be like 15 minutes of darkness. So there are some people that can just put their head on the pillow and go to sleep, but most people have to get to the right brainwave, and that takes like 15 minutes of darkness to be able to get down into sleep. If you think about the last thing you do before you go to bed is you go into a bright bathroom with huge lights, you stare in the mirror and you clean your teeth. And what you've done is just woken your brain up.
Mm-hmm.
And your brain should be going down to sleep.
So tip, brush your teeth in the dark.
Yeah, completely. Or brush your teeth half an hour before you're going to go to bed.
Yeah.
And then go through the preparation for sleep. The idea of you should spend time preparing yourself for sleep seems like a nonsense for lots of people. Because you just go to sleep. But if sleep is one of the most important functions of our day, it's a third of our lives, we should actually give it a bit more respect and prepare ourselves for it,
yeah.
Rather than just accept it as just something that we do.
Some kind of routine helps as well. When I was at university, one of the guys that I lived with, when I shared a house with a few pals, he would have a shower every night, like religiously. He was a night shower. Even if we'd been out on a night out, gotten it 2 a.m,
have a shower before he goes to bed.
You have a shower, you go to bed. But I always kind of figured that kind of doesn't it wake you up? But for him, it worked, I guess.
I assume. Yeah,
and Nick, if you're out there and you have trouble sleeping, let me know and I'll tell our audience, don't shower before bed. I think he sleeps well.
there is evidence, came across it in the East a lot, where people get what they call irritable legs or kind of itchy skin. And it's to do with the electronic charge on the skin. And by putting yourself in water, it can be as simple as standing in a bowl of water for a couple of minutes, or having the shower to have the same effect, as you actually earth the electrical, that static electrical charge of your skin, which enables your skin to relax. So you lose the irritability. And what they would say in the East was, before you go to bed, go and walk barefoot on the grass, because it would be damp from the moisture of the night and it would discharge your body, then go to sleep.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
find me a link on that one.
Yeah.
This one is Sean's pseudoscience.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't find any evidence for.
Well, one of the things about travelling in the East and picking up these different bits of wisdom, from ancient wisdom, I suppose, is finding stuff that is modern research that backs it up. You know.
Issue with these gurus, they haven't got any blogs. They haven't got websites.
Yeah, they should have. Yeah, yeah.
There's a gap in the market there.
Maybe people that are listening should, if we could do an experiment where everybody, every night for the next week, goes and walks barefoot on the lawn before you go to bed and see whether your sleep pattern improves. Yeah. Real life research going on. If you look at the way that industrialization has changed the way that we sleep and the way that we work.
Yep.
Yeah, that if you're looking at a sleep pattern, which over the last 100 years has reduced by about 2.5 hours a night, it's reckoned, when people were living in more of an agricultural world and they were living more with the seasons and with the light and the dark. And certainly, just a generation ago, there wasn't television 24 hours a day and all that kind of stuff. So the people, you know, the television went off at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock, whenever it went off. And people would go to bed. Yeah, I mean, one of the things you were just talking about was how you read in bed. And from a sleep science point of view, the last thing that you should do is read in bed, because what you're doing is you're waking your brain up.
Yep.
Yeah. And the idea about sleeping is you deactivate your brain. So one of the things that I think is really important to look at is, in looking at an individual relationship with sleep, is what's your bedroom like? Is your bedroom a place where you go to sleep? Is that its function, or is it a multimedia centre?
Well, that's one of the things, actually. I don't argue with Beth and my wife about it, but we're having a discussion about whether we should have a TV in the bedroom or not. And I'm vehemently opposed to it, like, just because I think it would be on all the time.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've done with clients who have sleep problems is actually go into their bedroom and reorganise the bedroom. So you take out all the media stuff. There's nothing to listen to. Right. There's nothing to read. This is a room that you go to sleep in. And if you want to use a television or you want to do some kind of media stuff, you actually go into another room and do it.
Mm.
So that psychologically and emotionally, this space, this sleep space, is where you sleep. That's what you do.
Okay, so we'll, looking at the people you work with and that you help, what stage do you start to talk about how people are sleeping? And
first session. When I'm doing I'm trying to understand the person. I want to know what their life's like. I want to know who they live with.
Yep.
I want to know what they do for a living. I want to know how they eat. I want to know how they sleep. I want to know whether they have repetitive dreams. There's all kinds of things that I want to understand about the person to so that I know what's going on in the system.
Sure.
Sleep function is very, very important when it comes to any kind of emotional disturbance. And the precursor for depression and anxiety is loss of sleep pattern. If you track people back, most people that are aware of it would be aware of a sleep loss before they get the symptoms.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that it happens that way round. And there would be evidence in that it's the lack of sleep that is contributing to the emotional imbalance.
Okay, so it can be that way round, rather than I'm thinking, okay, I'm depressed, and therefore I'm not sleeping, I'm not sleeping well, and it's leading to depression or
The things would be connected together. I mean, the research is quite phenomenal, because if you look at people that become sleep deprived and you look at psychiatry, the biggest problem when you're looking at schizophrenia, bipolar disorders and mood disorders generally is that people's sleep patterns don't work. And because we know that when you're asleep, genes become activated that are the repairing and the idea of memory consolidation and stuff that are all happening at night, if you're not sleeping, none of it's going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's no emotional, psychological repair going on. You know, therefore, the potentials to get iller are more intense. You know, it gets greater.
Yep.
Unless you sleep, and it becomes a spiral then, so that the worse I feel, the less I sleep, and then the less I sleep, the worse I feel, so it goes down and down and down, and very often it's like breaking habit. It's like people, I'm sure people listening to this now will identify with the idea that when you go into sleep disturbance, you suddenly find that you wake up at 3:30 every morning, or it might be 2:30 or 3 o'clock, and you wake up and you look at the clock and, my God, it's 3:30 again. And it's like it's become this habit that I do. You know, very weird. I had someone the other day who was waking up at 2:39, and every time they looked at the clock, it was 2:39. You know, their system is habituated into that circadian rhythm, that time.
They've got inbuilt alarm clock.
Yeah, and then learning to re-educate your system so that you can go back into a deep sleep pattern and go down into sleep again.
Do we need more sleep when we're younger than when we're older? I'm just thinking about people I know, obviously my son, but also old people that I know. I'm talking, you know, 70 plus, 80 plus. I hope I haven't offended anyone by saying that's old, but you're old. They get up at crack of dawn, like, or before dawn.
But if you look at sleep researchers, they would say that all these things are a myth. That the idea that when you get older you need less sleep, or the idea that when you're younger you would need more. I mean, the average teenager probably needs 8 to 9 hours. Yeah, the average person needs probably 8 hours-ish. Yeah, we know from statistics that the common sleep pattern is about 6.5 hours for most people. Yeah, and for some teenagers, because of the media issue in the bedroom, are sleeping on average 5 hours a night. If you take the media out of the bedroom, very often their sleep pattern will go back up to 8 to 9 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. Older people tend to go for about 5 hours a night, but they might very often be having the siesta. They might be having the nap in the afternoon.
Yeah. Well, we'll come on to that.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of my son and the sleep pattern that we tried to get him into, and I assume most people with young, really, really young children do. It's he goes to bed at 7 o'clock and he goes out like a light. No problem, man. I mean, we're quite lucky, I guess, in that sense, because I know some kids don't. He's waking at the moment 5:30, 6 o'clock most days. Even if we keep him up late, like sometimes if we have friends around or there's a special occasion and he gets to stay up late in his pyjamas, that excited. Even if we put him to bed at 8, 9 o'clock, praying that he might sleep in, he doesn't. He still wakes at 5:30 every day. So that's his little inbuilt alarm clock.
Yeah. It's interesting for me, if I've got someone who's been on long-term sick and they've been away from the workplace for ages, and it's holiday syndrome as well, because the levels of cortisol and adrenaline drop down in your system, which are the kind of the stress hormones, but they are the ones that give you the fuel to get going. Someone goes back to work, they've been off sick for 6 months, and they go back to work full time rather than a phased return, which is what I try and get them to do.
Yeah.
You'll find they come home and they're absolutely exhausted, and they'll go to sleep at sort of 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and get up in the morning and go to work. And then they'll do that for maybe 3-4 weeks before their system gets back up to full steam again.
Yeah.
And they can go back to less hours sleep. Yeah. But it's certainly, if someone comes along to me and they are reporting tiredness, it's standard. I get them to go to their GP and we're looking at thyroid, we're looking at liver, we're looking at kidneys, we're looking at that kind of stuff to check that things are all right. If things are all right there, then we're talking about depression usually. So as people get depressed, they start to get tired and lethargic, sleep crazy hours.
People at work shifts, are they more susceptible to...
Lots of evidence, again, because the human system is designed to go to sleep in the hours of darkness. When you force yourself to work through the hours of darkness, you're putting your system under a lot of stress. But shift workers over time have higher levels of illness generally. Immune systems are lower, not working as well.
Yeah.
And higher levels of cancer as well.
Wow.
Yeah, long-term shift workers. And I've often wondered, as I've worked with people like that, in the same way that people are now getting big claims against companies for asbestos damage. I wonder whether, as we learn more about how the system works, that people will claim against companies for shift work damage. You know, that it's actually damaged their health, you know, fundamentally, maybe even killed them.
Flip back.
Yeah, which is a bit scary. 31% of people will have micro naps, and what that means is that their brain will actually go to sleep, maybe for a few seconds, maybe 2, 3, 5, 10 seconds, and then they wake up again. In the States, the statistics would suggest that there's 100,000 road traffic accidents a year from people having micro naps. They're actually falling asleep at the wheel.
Wow.
Yeah, there are no stats that I can come across for UK. But I know that feeling of you're a bit tired and you're in a meeting and it's boring you to death. And you nod. And you find yourself, your head drops and you wake up again. And what's happened is for just that microsecond, you've gone to sleep.
Mm.
And that's interesting for me. If I'm running a training program or I'm delivering some kind of lecture or talk or something, and you're watching the audience and you can see people that are micro-napping and they're nodding, and the first instance you think, oh, it must be because I'm so boring. But then you start to realise that these people are actually sleep-deprived. It's a bit like when you meditate. If you go to sleep when you meditate, it's actually because you're sleep-deprived.
Problems like poor memory, problem-solving, obviously... It can just lead to a lack of concentration, like we're saying.
Other issues, impulsivity, because people have lost the rational control mechanisms in their tiredness. They will do things. I mean, they might shout, scream, act inappropriately, be rude, you know, whatever, without kind of realising that they're doing it too much just because they're tired.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the things when you're a parent and you've got a new child around... who is not sleeping, and there's Ed yawning away, is that it's easy to find yourself getting short. You've got a short fuse, you're getting snappy, because you're not getting that wonderful feeling of sleep. And that's one of the things, I think, is that we know what it feels like when we've had a good night's sleep. I mean, one of the things in terms of illnesses, the common thing is snoring. Yeah, and people snore. They used to say that from an evolutionary point of view, that the function of men snoring was to scare predators away. So that it was like, whoa, you know, there's a big, you know, grizzly bear asleep in there. So they're not going to sleep. And men tend to snore more than women. But if you look at snoring as a process, it's about the tissues in either the nasal cavity or lower down in the throat relaxing and becoming soft. And then they're flapping. They're flapping in the breeze, as it were. And the things that would exacerbate that are things like alcohol, things like smoking, and things like weight.
Yeah.
Weight is the most common. And we'll look at weight in a second and sleep, because it's very relevant. But once people start to get either an apnea, where they're actually stopping breathing, they might stop breathing for 10 seconds, and then suddenly come back again, that kind of thing, is where the tubes are actually closing down.
Mm-hmm.
The pipes are closing down, so the air can't get in. One of the things that becomes apparent when you get a snoring cycle is that the person isn't sleeping properly. Yeah, and the more someone snores, then the less good sleep they get.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm sure Rhea would be saying, but you snore, Sean. Yeah, and it's certainly true. If I drink some wine, then I snore. That's true.
Yeah, I'm the same. A couple of months ago, I went through a period. I wasn't aware of it because I was asleep, but for like a week where I was snoring every night. Not through drink, or maybe I've been eating too much, I don't know. But then it just kind of stopped, and as far as I've been told otherwise, I'm not snoring again, so I'm not sure what went on.
If you've got an infection, so that you get a swelling of the lining of the respiratory tract, then you're going to start to occlude the opening, aren't you? Then you're going to get a snoring sound. So when people have got colds and chests and things, they'll snore.
Mm.
Yeah, some people will snore when they're on the back, and that's usually to do with weight, and it's the weight of the belly pressing down and pushing up into the respiratory system, pushing the diaphragm up and the lungs up.
Well, let's talk more about weight then, because you said you were going to get to this.
Yeah, well, one of the kinds of things that happen is that, let's talk about what we eat first of all. It's like commonly people want to have an awake brain, so in the morning they would drink coffee. And people think when they drink tea that they're clear of it, but you have tannin and you also have caffeine in tea as well.
Mm-hmm.
The only decaffeinated tea I'm aware of is something called Luarca. There must be others, but yeah. But essentially, people are using things. We're using sugars and caffeine, tannin, and health drinks, you know, sports drinks, to wake our brain up. They're all getting us going. Yeah, and then we're wired and we want to go to sleep. maybe we think we ought to go to sleep. So we're lying in bed, tossing and turning, because our system's wired with all the chemistry. And the classic is that people then drink alcohol to anaesthetise the brain.
Right.
Yeah, but when you drink alcohol to anaesthetise the brain, you're not actually going to sleep. You're anaesthetising your brain. The sleep is different.
Mm-hmm.
So you, and people very often, when they have that relationship with alcohol, will wake up with a thick head or the hangover, because the brain has become dehydrated and isn't working well.
Yeah.
If people tolerate alcohol okay, so they don't get hangovers, then you find that the brain's functioning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're more likely to sleep in alcohol than someone who wakes up with a hangover. It's different.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the things that we know is that when people are sleep deprived, a variety of things happen. But this one I really like is there's a hormone which is known as the hunger hormone, which is ghrelin, which is released when people don't sleep. And what happens is when you don't sleep, your body releases the ghrelin and you start to crave carbohydrates and sugars. And you start then to put on weight. Now, one of the things that we looked at a while ago was that if Britain is the fattest country in Europe, we know that when people eat carbs and sugars, that their brain secretes serotonin, which makes them feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that if we've got people that are not sleeping well because they're depressed, because we know that in depression your sleep pattern goes, they're then releasing ghrelin, which is the hunger hormone, which is making them crave carbohydrates and sugars, which is making them put on weight. So that the issue about, do people put on weights because they're depressed, or do people put on weight because they're depressed and they lose their sleep pattern, which makes them eat the carbs and the sugars? Do you mean it's we don't know where we are in the cycle.
Mm.
Yeah, but certainly if you're not getting enough sleep, you're likely to be putting on weight, and if you're putting on weight, it's likely that you're not getting enough sleep.
I've read quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'll check my sources, but inactivity and fatigue in the afternoon can be a lot down to dehydration. And same in the first thing in the morning if you wake up feeling a bit groggy. So what I try to do now is, and I think it is working, I have a real glug of water before I go to bed. And then first thing when I get up, I'll just neck a whole load of water as well.
Yeah.
And I find that just gives me a little...
When you say a whole load of water, what are you talking about?
Well,
volume?
A glass, I don't know, man.
Pint?
Maybe 3/4 of a pint.
Yeah.
Yeah, half a pint.
Yeah. One of the things that people will say when they're talking about disturbed sleep is they will say that they won't have a drink for several hours before they go to bed, so they don't wake up in the night and need to go to the loo. Yeah, but what you're saying is very interesting, isn't it? In terms of, I mean, I know that one of the things, and I wondered about this when I pulled the tendon in my leg, reading around it, is about lack of hydration. And waking up in the morning at 5, doing a warm-up and going for a run, maybe what I should be doing is waking up, drinking the 3/4 of a pint, doing the warm-up and going for a run.
Get some H2O in you.
Yeah.
I know for people of a certain age, I don't want to suggest yourself, but guys especially, then the night trip to the loo, half asleep, is quite a feature of sleep as well.
Yeah, I mean, the whole kind of prostate issues.
Yes.
Yeah, and which, I mean, men 35, 40 onwards, prostate's getting bigger.
I'm getting close.
Yeah, so like the issues of needing to pee in the night is going to grow. I mean, the things that keep growing in men particularly are your nose, your ears and your prostate.
Yeah.
They keep getting bigger all the time.
All the fellas, yeah.
Big ears, big nose, big prostate.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up in a bit, but just quickly I want to talk a bit about napping in the afternoon, which we've mentioned in other podcasts in the past, but it's not something that in England, or the UK, sorry, is that socially acceptable. We know that it works. There's a lot of research. There's this chapter in The 4-Hour Body by Tim Ferriss, which talks about sleep and the fact that little 20-minute naps dotted throughout the day can actually, to a certain extent, can reduce the need for a big 8-hour kip completely. So if you split your day into little 20-minute naps, you don't need to sleep through the night, which is quite interesting.
But that goes back to the thing we were talking about the ratio of relaxation and meditation to sleep is 5-1. So if you've got 10 minutes of good rest, that's like having 50 minutes of sleep, of good sleep. Now, if you say someone's taking a 20-minute power nap, there's part of that 20 minutes where they're getting into the sleep and when they're coming out of it.
Mm.
So maybe you got 10 or 15 minutes in the middle, which is real relaxation. And if you multiply that by five, that's what you're getting. So, I mean, certainly, when you do Andy Puddicombe's Headspace, they will send you reminders throughout the day, which is like, how's your headspace going? Mm. With the idea that maybe you could just spend a few minutes just chilling out and contacting your inner self meditatively. But if you're doing that and you start to multiply that up times five, then people may be taking several hours of sleep in the day. By just taking
it's whether your
slots,
life can accommodate that, really, isn't it? Like, well, for me, yeah, it's about having a family and stuff. And sure, yeah, I'd love to sleep 12 hours a night or even have afternoon naps and what have you. But, you know, I've got people relying on me for work and I've got places to go.
And I understand that as a concept. And I could say I suffer from the same kind of concept. But the bit that has to be important is that we know that when you sleep and you're rested, like the meditative stuff and the sleep, is that your efficiency goes up. So, and it's that thing, it's the Gandhi thing again, isn't it? It's like, if I'm busy, I need to sleep, I need to meditate, I need to look after me more, and we keep doing it less.
Yeah, you need to value sleep, don't you? It's about valuing yourself and working on yourself. Sleep's important.
So someone's working hard, and they're bushed, and what do? They go and eat a yummy bar, which is the feeding the hunger hormone
yummy
to replace
bar.
The fact that they're not sleeping.
That sounds nice.
A yummy bar.
Yeah.
What would it be? Snickers, I don't know. Whatever's yummy for you. Yeah.
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 Yeah, it's true. But there's a cool article I found called The Napping Habits of Eight Famous Men.
Right.
Winston Churchill's the first one they mentioned, and he's the one I Googled because I know that he napped religiously throughout the busiest parts of his life when, you know, World War II was going on.
But one of the other things of that is that I don't know the accuracy of this. I know that he had a good relationship with the bottle. I know he would drink a bottle of champagne a day. The rumours are they also drank a bottle of brandy a day.
Well, whiskey is what's mentioned in this
article.
Watered-down whiskey kind of sipped on all morning.
Right. But the thing is that because of what we know about alcohol and sleep, when he was napping, the chances are he wasn't sleeping. He was anaesthetising. So that the processing in the brain doesn't happen. And that's important, is that when you're stuck in an alcoholic cycle, you're not learning, you're not processing, you're not actually consolidating what's happened to you during the day.
Right.
Yeah. So it could be that, yes, he was napping like crazy, but all he was doing was trying to work the alcohol out of his system rather than actually sleeping.
You heard it here first. Winston Churchill, the alcoholic. Probably not first, actually. I'm sure plenty of people saw that.
Yeah.
But he got some good work done, I guess, as well, didn't he? Maggie Thatcher as well. She's quite famous for only needing 4 hours sleep a night.
I wonder whether she did do any power napping.
Yeah, I'll just look it up. I haven't heard that at all, but I just think she was a machine.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to talk to her family, maybe.
It would. Okay. Next week, we're going to talk about dreams, aren't we?
Yeah.
So it's kind of leading on from what we've just discussed.
Yeah, dreams are so fundamentally important to who we are as people. And everybody dreams, even people that say, I don't dream.
Yeah,
yeah, they do. Everybody dreams. One of the things that was always taught to me when I was being trained years ago was that the more awake you are during the day, the more awake you are at night, in the sense that the more switched on you are, the more you remember your dreams.
Okay.
Yeah, and one of the things that we want to look at that you and I have both experienced is active dreaming, which is fun. That's good.
Yeah,
good
game. I'm going to fly. I can fly. that's next week.
Yep.
Let's wrap up this week with some resource of the week. Sure.
Can I just do some self-help tips?
Oh, yes.
Okay. If you want to improve your sleep pattern, make your bedroom what it is, a bedroom. It's a room that you go to bed in. You don't do anything else in it.
Yep.
And that means get rid of all the media devices. The only thing you're allowed in there is a clock to wake you up, is that's what you need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but get rid of your phone, get rid of your iPads, televisions, the lot. Clear it all out.
Okay.
Yeah?
You're not going to like my resource of the week then. But yeah, go on.
Second thing is it's better to have the window open just a bit. Cool it down, have some fresh air in. People get a better sleep pattern that way.
Yes, yeah.
You need to experience the dark before you go to sleep. Yeah, and when you wake up in the morning and you want to get your brain going, rather than going for the caffeine, turn the light on. Go and stand in the bathroom, you know, clean your teeth, get the light into your brain, get your brain up and awake,
yeah,
rather than relying on the caffeine to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good tips.
Yeah. Results of the week. My results of the week is a Paul McKenna recording, which I do dispute the title. He says, "I can make you sleep." No, he can't. No, you can make you sleep. He can assist you in the process, but he doesn't do it.
Yep.
A bit egotistical, that. But a good recording, good science behind the recording, better with headphones on earbuds.
Mm.
Yeah, but very effective. And I've used that with people. Does increase the sleep pattern. Well, it's good.
Cool. It's got a nice big picture of his face on the book, in front of the book. So, yeah.
Obviously puts you to sleep.
Cool. My resource of the week actually came from a blog, which I've found The 5 Best Sleep Tracking Gadgets or Apps. There are a lot of gadgets out there and apps for your phone that can track how your sleep pattern has gone. And what they tend to do is you set the app running on your iPhone or your Android phone. You stick it under your pillow. And it kind of monitors the state of sleep you're in, and it gives you a graph in the morning, and it judges it by how much movement you've got going on and that kind of thing.
Right.
And the other clever thing that they can do is wake you at the appropriate time. So rather than setting an alarm for 7 o'clock, you set it for 7-ish on the app, and it will judge when you're in a light sleep. So you can kind of set it for 15 minutes either side of 7,
right,
and it will wake you at the appropriate time. So you wake up feeling refreshed rather than groggy.
Yeah.
That's the thinking behind it.
There is a waking system which worked with a light at the end of the bed that would gradually lighten the room.
Yeah.
So that by the time you did come to consciousness, you're in lights. Daylight. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's some called the Jawbone Up is one of the best on the market. It's a little thing. It's a bracelet you wear on your wrist, and it tracks your sleep, but it also, throughout the day, it monitors how many steps you've taken.
Right.
So it does a lot more than just sleep, but it's come on quite a bit since it's first released.
Yeah, interesting.
But that kind of thing is pretty, those apps are pretty impressive. But it means having some kind of technology in your bedroom, if you can sleep with that.
Yeah. Okay, last thing.
Oh,
last
thing.
Last week we did the meditation, and you were going to try it for the week. Have you done it?
I've done it a couple of times. I realised I was struggling, so I've put it in my Lyft app daily habit thing.
Okay.
So that means there's a better chance of me actually doing it.
Yeah.
So, yes and no. There's still work to be done there.
Yeah. And if anybody out there has been trying the meditation, either Headspace or just doing the short ones that we were doing, let us know how you got on.
Yeah, do.
Be good.
Let's get some feedback, eh?
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
Happy, Sean?
I'm happy. I'm always happy.
Okay. For all the links to everything we've discussed, go to livingthepresent.co.uk. You'll find all the show notes there. You can also find out lots more about the work that we're doing and download lots of free goodies. Sign up to our mailing list and you'll get weekly podcast alerts. So you can be the first to listen to this wonderful show. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. If you can leave us a review on iTunes, that'd be cool. We love reading them. Love reading them out. And lastly, if you could just share this show either on Twitter, on Facebook, share it with a pal, email it to someone, that would really help.
Yeah.
Just grow our audience and hope, assuming you like what we're doing.
Yeah.
If you don't, then no pressure.
Then turn it off.
Yeah. Right, Sean, there's work to be done in the world.
Yeah, I should go and do it.
Should we get to it?
Yeah, okay.
Have a good week.
And you, take care.
See ya. Bye.